Once more into the breach, dear friend.
Else close the wall up with our English debt.
And here we are, ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, with another exciting episode of The Personal Wealth Coach, starring Jeff and
Jake
McClure. And yeah. If you'd like to give us a call in here, and presuming that today is the 21st of December 2019, you can do so at 254-773-1400. If it's any other day, you can call the number. It will ring, but we won't answer. Let's see. What else do we have to say? We have to say that The Personal Wealth Coach is not only the name of this riveting, meaning very hot and puncturing.
It's what happens with rivets.
Radio program. It's also the name of an SEC registered investment advisory firm in Salado, Texas. And the two guys here, Jeff and
Jake.
I wanted to see if you were awake. Are the principal investment advisors at that firm. Now, the fact that the names are the same doesn't mean we're giving investment advice. It means that what we're doing, excuse me, is
educational.
Educational information. And this firm and the show, it's not a show, it's a tell, is neither approved nor disapproved by the Securities and Exchange Commission.
Right.
Secretary, we will disavow all, the secretary will disavow all knowledge. Do they have a secretary? I guess they do.
They have commissioners. They're not, they have secretaries.
I'll bet they
that
have
work
secretaries that work for the commissioners.
Those secretaries will disavow,
they'll disavow all knowledge of us.
We don't even have knowledge of us. That's the thing.
We are not paid to do this radio program, but neither do we pay KTM to do the radio program.
However, we
do. So that is an absolute non quid pro quo.
Right. We do advertise on the radio station.
For the radio program.
Yes. Which is
weird.
Weird. We've just decided to do that to support ourselves, I guess.
Well, actually, it does work in our advantage.
They also advertise our radio program.
Yes.
So
well, they advertise it. They don't really advertise the radio program.
Sure, they do.
We pay them to advertise the radio program.
Well, we advertise for our radio program, but they also advertise when they talk about what's going to be on the radio. They talk about, so that's advertising for themselves.
Ed Laughlin just got through.
And he said, stay tuned for The Personal Wealth Coach.
So that's an advertisement for the program.
So,
and we didn't pay Ed Laughlin for that.
No, KTEM and several of the other hosts also advertise for our program.
So the question is there quid pro quo? Perhaps.
Why are we speaking in Latin?
Because it's cool.
Is that a form of cancer?
It's a very popular, quid pro quo has become a very popular saying.
I've gotten my test back. It's positive for quid pro quo.
Yes.
How long do I have, Doc? Well, how much do you have to give me?
How long you
there's
have depends on how much you have. So there's quid pro quo.
Ah, there is no quid pro quo, Senator. You have to throw in Senator every time you say that. I just remember that from Ronald Reagan era.
Actually, I remember from the Watergate era.
Yeah, you actually can remember that far back.
I can. Yeah. I think I can remember that far back.
I cannot.
I have no recollection of that event, Senator.
Reading about it, but
recollection of that event, Senator. Anyway, this is The Personal Wealth Coach, and we talk about things to do with the economy and
tongue in cheek, a little bit of politics, but it's all tongue in cheek for the political side.
You're probably talking with your tongue in cheek.
It's very, very disturbing to hear somebody really talking tongue in cheek.
I really don't understand tongue in cheek talking. When we're talking, it's tongue in cheek.
Yeah. I think it's a turn of phrase, which if you've ever tried to turn a phrase.
A turn up phrase?
Goodness gracious.
Anyway. The telephone number here remains 254-773-1400 if you would like to inject some sanity into this discussion.
But only if today is the winter solstice. It is.
It is the winter. This is the first day of winter.
It is. Well, tomorrow will be officially the first day of winter.
Well, sometime during today we'll switch over.
Tonight is the longest night of the year.
It's the
shortest
night.
Day of the year today. Ooh.
I'm glad that most businesses are closed today then because they wouldn't get much done.
Yeah, it'd be very short.
Next 2 weeks. By the way, since we're lapsing into economics here.
Slowly lapsing into economics through solstices away from tongue-in-cheekness.
I want to make a prediction, an economic prediction.
Okay. Get your recorders out.
For the next 2 weeks, the productivity of the United States workers will fall dramatically.
In a non-seasonably adjusted.
Nominally.
Yes.
Nominally.
Nominal.
This is nominally phenomenally.
Yeah. So this is a great example of why the statisticians, the economists that study the stats of the economy, seasonally adjust things. Because otherwise we would always have this horrible drop in production in the late December time period where everybody would say something is fundamentally wrong with the economy.
Well,
look at what's happened here. We have people just staying home all day and deciding not to go to work.
And it's going to be worse this year than on most years because both Christmas and New Year's fall on a Wednesday.
Yeah.
And it's just going to basically fracture the week.
Sometimes they fall on weekends, which you get an extra long weekend, but that actually improves the productivity in the following week. When it falls on a Wednesday, when you come back on a Thursday, you are still not back. Sorry, guys. You are not back at work.
Friday, you're looking forward to the weekend.
Right.
And Monday, you're trying to get over the weekend.
And then you're looking forward to...
And then Tuesday is Christmas Eve, and everybody closes early.
Right. And then Wednesday's Christmas, you're gone. Thursday, you come back, you're
That's
not
Boxing
really back.
Day.
Friday, you come back, you're thinking about the weekend. And then Monday, you come back, and you're already thinking about, well, I've got New Year's Eve is coming. I'm going to have a good party. And so we've got 2 weeks that are just blasted right through the middle of them with productivity killers that are quite fun, but still quite bad for productivity.
I am of the opinion that we should have a nonsense holiday like the British do on the day after Christmas, call it Boxing Day.
Well, the Canadians do it too.
I don't know what.
But
what, I've never been able to figure out what it is that box. Does it mean that you get on gloves and you punch each other, or do you put things in boxes?
You definitely put things in boxes. Yeah. Can you imagine the polite Canadians getting into boxing matches just because?
It's because it's Boxing Day?
I just don't think that's going to happen.
I don't know.
The British don't even box. They fisticuff. So you have to put your fists up backwards.
And use your cuffs?
Yes. Yeah.
They fisticuffs. I never even figured out what Boxing Day is about because you don't put things in boxes the day after Christmas. Maybe it's when you get rid of all the boxes.
You get rid of all the boxes, yeah. You load up all the trash from all the gifts, and you put them in boxes, and you put them out on the street.
Well, you know,
call it a holiday.
Boxing Day may be more appropriate now that I think about it, because so many things are being bought online, and you have to put
Amazon.
It back in boxes to return it.
They should stop their Pi Day and just make it...
Pi Day?
Yeah, they do Pi for Prime.
Oh.
Their Amazon Prime Pi Day.
Oh.
March 14th, and sometimes they double it up, so double Pi Day would be June 28th.
Yeah, but that doesn't make any sense, because Pi is not a prime number.
That's...
It has to be an integer to be a prime number.
You're talking my language now. I am totally in that, and Pi is... Well, Pi is prime.
And it's round. It's not square.
That's part of the problem with the numbers. You keep going off into the distance. This is not square. It's round, and when you make it square, it doesn't work. Pi are not square.
Anyway.
Yeah.
Let's talk about the markets for a moment.
Yes, let's do that.
So we have
now left Tongue-in-Cheekville, gone through Solstice Town, walked through the decimated productivity at the end of December every year, and now we're walking into the markets.
Oh, decimated. There's another misnomer.
Oh,
decimated
10%
means
10%.
Yeah, but actually, what decimated has come to mean is a whole bunch of people get killed.
Right. Well, that's because the when a Roman legion mutinied or didn't follow an order, the punishment was decimation by lots.
But that's
they would
one
take
every,
lots, one
that's
every
one
10.
Every 10. But we're talking about decimation means a whole bunch more than 10.
Yeah. So it's because people didn't understand Latin for a long time after the Romans left. So decimation just meant a bunch. And
which is an economic term, like stuff.
Now that we're back understanding mathematics again, we still use that to mean a bunch rather than 10%.
And we use bunches to count bananas.
And grapes.
Despite the fact that there's...
And underwear.
Bunches of underwear?
Yeah, don't let them get bunched.
Oh.
See what I did?
I got you. Anyway,
Be Christmas week.
There is a tradition that isn't... That according to the statisticians, doesn't exist. The factor doesn't exist, but... The traders all believe it exists, and
yes.
I kind of think it exists, too, called a Santa Claus rally.
That's correct.
And a Santa Claus rally is something that comes around Christmas when all of a sudden
For no particular reason.
For no particular reason, the markets rise. Now, it didn't happen last year. We got an anti-clause rally last year.
Well, the government was shut down. Grinch was in power at the time.
Well, the point is, obviously, it's something from the government because we didn't get the Santa Claus rally last year, and the government was shut down. So these two were coincident.
And yesterday, we avoided a government shutdown.
And instead of getting a SAG at the end of the year, we got a Santa Claus rally that started yesterday.
What does it mean that the markets are so happy with Congress that they did their job that they have a little party?
I mean, Congress
doesn't do their job very often.
It is truly an amazing fact of the Santa Claus rally, but it's here this year. We had a 1.65% increase in the S&P 500 this week, and a little bit of it was on Thursday, but almost all of it was on Friday when the market suddenly soared into oblivion or someplace before they shut down. And an awful lot of things happened on that day, but the fact is that there wasn't so much that did happen as didn't happen. In other words, there was bad news that could have been that didn't happen. The government didn't shut down on Friday because in a sudden rush of passing of bills that nobody had read, the House and the Senate passed budget bills. And done.
Thank you,
put
sir.
Put it off for a little while. And the House passed the USMCA. And if you don't know what the USMCA, I'm finally saying USMCA instead of NAFTA.
Well, it is still a North American agreement, but it is the U.S., United States, M, Mexico, C, Canada, A, agreement.
And
it also is very similar to the U.S. Marine Corps with an A at the end.
Yeah, that's right. So it's U.S. Marine Corps with an A at the end.
Association.
Oh, okay. Yes. United States Marine Corps Association, then I guess would be the U.S.
It's a free trade agreement between Mexico and Canada. It's called the United States Marine Corps Association.
And it's enforced by the Marines.
Yes.
Okay.
Well, I would sign up for that.
And let's see, what else did we... Oh, yeah, and the SECURE Act passed. Yeah,
that was part of the continuing resolution for the budget. So the SECURE Act, which we will get into more detail,
yes,
it's a pretty big change to retirement programs.
And it will change the way your retirement program works, particularly after you die.
Yes.
And
that's double retired.
And we have a caller on 773-1400. So, caller, you are on the air with the Personal Wealth Coach. Go ahead.
Yeah, guys, enjoyed the show. I understand they passed another financial rule that allowed, make it easier for more businesses to start 401ks.
Yep.
If more money's going to be available, I know it's going to take time to get those up and running, but if more money is chasing the same amount of stocks, is that going to be good for the stock market? I hang up on this.
Okay.
He always asks such good questions.
Yes, he does. It's like he's writing down questions throughout the week. And
it's like, maybe he's
good stuff.
But he reads, it's in the journal, which, by the way, means the Wall Street Journal.
Right.
Which means he reads the Wall Street Journal,
although,
which makes him very unusual.
Sometimes it's called the Wall Street.
It is?
And sometimes it's called the Journal.
What?
Yes. I've had people, many, many people tell me over the years, I was reading the Wall Street the other day. And I'm like, well, is that the street sign?
No, it's the manhole covers.
There's the Wall Street.
I've actually walked up and down Wall Street, and it's a very insignificant street other than the fact that it's so important.
His question is exactly on the subject we were talking about, the SECURE Act, which I am not going to I'm not going to do the acronym. I refuse to. It's a
misnomer.
It is middle school level acronym creating so they could call it SECURE Act. I'm just going to call it the SECURE Act because the acronym is stupid.
It's the Insurance Company Profit Increase Act of 2019.
There's good news and there's bad news in there. So what the caller said about the small business 401k thing. Cool.
Okay. If you can get several small businesses to agree to form a 401k together.
This is the thing. This is what I've been reading in a lot of different areas. Kitsis being one of them, Kitsis is someone that we know and is a kind of a unifying voice in the, fiduciary, planning world for people that have complex and deep portfolios that need a lot of work. And what he was saying is that if you have a fiduciary that just basically builds the perfect 401k, and says, this is what I want to use. If any of my business clients come to me and say, I want to start a 401k, this is the one I'll put them in. And we'll just make it open-ended that we can add more businesses or take more businesses away. And there's enough vagueness in there that, in the new law, it doesn't clearly say how you're supposed to allow people in or out. So you could just make a plan that allows new businesses to come in. You're only responsible for paying for your own employees, for matching and so on. So that's a cool thing.
There's an important factor here. The 401k is an accident.
Yes. It was not intentionally done.
It's not an accident waiting to happen. It's an accident that's ongoing. It's a continuous accident.
It was found by an accountant looking through Section 401 and said, hey, it looks like we can use this to create a deductible investment vehicle.
And the problem with the 401k is since it happened by accident, the IRS has never said, here's how you build a 401k. So each one has to be designed individually. Now, there's certain safe harbor provisions that the IRS won't object to.
And those safe harbors have been expanded in this law.
But it's a complex thing to create, and each one has to be created individually, unlike an IRA, which is a standardized option. I mean, you don't have to create.
It was created intentionally, not by accident.
So what happens is it's expensive to create a 401k. And if you, a small business, with, let's say, 10 employees, it is overwhelmingly expensive to create a 401k unless the proprietor is just very, very wealthy and has a lot of money he wishes to invest
right.
on a tax-advantaged basis.
That is generally what small businesses do when they set up a 401k. They're really doing it for the founder, and what this law is intended to do is make it available to everybody.
And with this, a given vendor that creates 401ks can have a standardized 401k and have one 401k with a whole, there's an economic term here again, and a whole bunch of individual businesses in it. And
right.
You just basically pay for your own employees.
So in this
case,
it's kind of like a standardized 401k that multiple businesses are able to say, yeah, that looks good to me. So if you've got a tricked out 401k, you may want to say, hey, our 401k is great. Are there any other businesses that would like to get involved? And that can lower your 401k costs if you're a small business.
Whether businesses will take advantage of it or not.
That's a big question.
The
marketplace is going to have to provide them with an answer. When the marketplace is going to be people that design 401ks are going to have to say, they're going to have to step up and say, we're going to lower our prices per company.
Yeah.
Because that's a big thing. We'll wait and see if that happens, but it's kind of exciting from my perspective. That could be written into agreements saying the more businesses associated, the less the fee is on any individual. And that's a fantastic option there. We didn't really touch the question that the caller asked, though, which is, with more money coming into the markets because of more 401ks available, will that be just a danger thing in the current scenario where more money is going to be chasing already overpriced stocks?
Well, there's two ways of looking at that.
There's more than two ways.
At least two ways of looking at that.
There's two ways for every eyeball.
The more money, to a point, that we take out of our payroll and don't spend on consumerism and instead invest as capital, the more capital there is for American businesses, corporations, to expand what they're doing and do research and development and come up with better ways to eliminate jobs and put robots in there.
Right. And 401ks often have significantly less movement in and out of positions.
Mm-hmm.
Because your typical 401k participant, let's move beyond the typical into the extremely well-educated 401k participants that are good with tech stuff, have trouble changing their allocations in their 401k because you've got to change it in multiple places and nobody's got a good 401k website. Nobody. I have never seen a good 401k website, and that's partially intentional. They don't want to make it easy to move stuff around in there. You get your thing set up and you leave it alone. So what that does is instead adds some stability to the marketplace, being the stock market in this case.
It actually turns it over to professional managers in many cases because in most cases now the age the target date fund is the default fund that people are going into.
Right, right. So whatever the date around the year around when you retire, that's usually the default setup in there. Sometimes it's a very, very conservative, near cash-like position. That's the default.
And there's, even though, for instance, Morningstar has said that the target date funds are not particularly effective, they're a lot more effective than trying to guess.
Yes. And then the other thing to throw in here is that it's going to have nearly zero impact with new money for the near future. Near future may be 12 to 24 months because 401ks are not easy to set up.
Mm-hmm. Even a group 401k.
Right.
And the other thing is...
And when you do get them set up, the participants are going to be putting in small amounts of money per month.
The other thing is to remember... I forgot.
You said there were two ways of looking at this to begin with, so you only hit one of them.
See, the delay. The other thing is that when we set up all these 401ks and the money starts flowing into the 401ks, what that will do, hopefully, prayerfully, is extend people's retirement better, create a better funded retirement program for people, which they're going to need.
Right. Yeah, and that is fantastic.
But,
you know, it was 20 years ago now that the big debate on Social Security was going on between Al Gore and George W. Bush.
Lockbox.
The lockbox or the privatization.
20 years?
20 years. That was 1999.
Wow.
No, wait. No, it wasn't 20 years ago. It was after Clinton. Yeah, it was 20 years ago.
It was 20 years ago.
1999.
It was a long time ago. Anyway, is it going to have a profound effect? Not in the immediate future. It's also going to take a while for people who have individual 401ks with all the bells and whistles they put in their 401ks to give up the idea that every employer should have an individual 401k with their own bells and whistles in it. The other side of it is, in order to use a 401k, an employer has to have a profit margin large enough that they can afford to give away some more money.
Right. They have to be able to afford to give away the money and afford the testing process that says how much money are you making, how much money are you contributing. That's not cheap.
You have to pay a third. Well, that's the point. If you pay a third party administrator, 5 or 6 employees or employers or 10 employers or 12 or 100 can get together and pay once for all that testing.
Right.
And the 401k business is really, a very, very specialized area. And companies called third party administrators who do all the testing and validation and verification to keep the IRS and the Labor Department happy. And it is, let's put it like this. I have observed employers really screw up 401ks to the point where they could have been wearing orange jumpsuits had they not fessed up.
Right. And unfortunately, with the small business 401k, that is a lot more normal than unnormal. That is much closer to the norm in the small business world.
This takes me to a completely different subject that's the same subject.
A different, same subject.
Yeah.
Okay.
There's something going on in the corporate economy right now that is more than a little fascinating to me. And it boils down to the fact that the top 50 companies in the S&P 500, 10% of the S&P 500, are turning in some really, really good profits. The other 450 companies are in a profit recession. In other words, they have lost their profitability is shrinking and has been shrinking for several years now, actually.
Now, they're still profitable by and large. There are some losing money, but the vast majority of these companies maintain profitability. They're just less profitable than they were.
They have a shrinking profitability, which is an indication that something needs to be revamped in the system somewhere. And we can see evidence of that, by the way. Prices have not risen at stores. They're actually going down. So the Walmarts and the Amazons are reducing prices, steadily reducing prices, which is forcing everybody else into a position where they have to reduce prices to remain competitive, and they don't have the scales to do this. So this is an awkward situation. Well, it gets worse. Once we get away from listed companies, and the majority of corporations in the United States are not listed on the stock exchange. They're not publicly traded companies. Commerce Department Bureau of Economic Analysis, which is one of my favorite places. I would love to visit the BEA. I don't know if they allow visitors, but it would be really cool. See all those guys with the green eye
visors,
and sitting in little lamps, and they have magnifying glasses. Just, and,
they don't have roller top desks either.
Oh, in my mind, they do.
No, I think you're thinking of the railroad stationer.
Well, but I'm thinking of the bureau. Any place that's got that's full of bureaucrats, it's a Bureau of Economic Analysis. They're probably still using paper files.
Oh yeah.
And anyway,
they have their sleeves rolled up with the buttons holding the sleeves up.
Right.
The little strap
buttons.
Yes. Yeah.
And anyway.
Yeah.
Bureau of Economic Analysis noted that among non-listed companies, non-publicly traded companies, the profit margin has been falling now for 5 years and is down 13% over that period.
And there's some good reasons for that. Even in cases where sales are up, wages are also up. But what's more, benefits. This is a big one.
Healthcare.
Health insurance rates have risen dramatically over the last decade. Dramatically meaning if you had had your money invested at this kind of investment rate, you would have doubled the market return of the whole S&P 500. We've seen an average of around 15% in increases for insurance rates over the last decade.
Except that the insurance companies are not doubling their money every couple of years.
No, but several of them are near record highs as far as profitability goes.
So the point is that there is a lot of good news, and we're going to talk about that. Housing starts, permits, consumer purchases, you go down the list that just came out for the month of November. And it's all wonderful, amazing, good news. The economy is going at full throttle. It looks like we've reached a permanent plateau of prosperity.
Yeah, those are dangerous words.
The problem with that is
those words get spoken at the top of every bull market.
When you dig down into the innards of the working of the economy, you realize that but basically there's only 50 companies that are hitting these that are creating these job these wage increases and these. All the things that are wonderful, there's 50 gigantic companies that are creating so much of it that it's hiding the fact that 95% of companies out there are seeing profit squeezes. They're seeing trouble making as much money as they made last year. They're seeing their margins shrink. And this is an indication that there is a hollow core to this expansion at this point. There is rot at the center of the tree. It's kind of like a big old tree that we had behind our house that we are aware of the fact that it had rotted down the center. It's hackberry tree.
Mm-hmm.
And they do that. Rotting starts up at the top at some branch and
right.
It rots down through the center. And all of a sudden a little puff of wind came along, a typical thunderstorm, nothing big, nothing earth shattering or anything. And the entire tree fell over and missed our house. Thank God.
But was anybody there to hear it?
Yes.
So
it woke us up.
Did
the dogs woke up. We woke up.
Did it make a noise?
They made a loud noise.
Okay. So we've established that if you're there to hear the tree falling in your backyard, it does make a noise.
But wherever I am, I'm there.
Mm.
So I'm always there.
Oh, yeah.
So this is the kind of thing that's going on in our economy. Do I think the entire economy is going to collapse? No. But I do think that there are a lot of signs of a hollowness in the economy at the lower level, at the mom and pop store, at the small store level, and at the small company. When I say small company, that includes sometimes several thousand employees. That is got to be addressed with a restructuring. This is the only way we ever address this. And we mentioned in the newsletter that a lot of signs are out there that this looks a lot like 1999. Now, do I think we're going to have a major collapse like we had between 2000 and 2002? No. But I'm reasonably confident that I'm caveating the heck out of this. I believe that there is a fairly high probability, at least 50%, that we will have a recession next year. And I'm more convinced of it now than I was before because we are among the very few people still suggesting it. Everybody else that I read is saying, oh, no, it's all over. Everything is fine. We got trade agreements. We got USMCA. We got a budget passed. Everything is cool. Profitability is coming back. Housing starts are coming back. we're cool, we're good to go. But the thing is, I've been in this business too long.
Yeah.
And I remember 1999 so well when the optimism started to rise. Believe me, before the end of 1999.
There were a lot of people that were saying, what's going to happen next?
Yeah, because
problems on the horizon. And
we had this big dip at the market at the end of 1998, just like we did at the end of 2018.
People don't remember that anymore, by the way.
2018?
Yeah, they don't remember that we were down 20% in the market 1 year ago. So all the great returns. By the way, the market looks phenomenal for this year, but because it was down 20% at the beginning of the year.
Until you look at the price-to-earnings ratio, and then you start to sweat.
And you say, well, it's not that.
Because earnings have been declining. Year over year, in the third quarter, earnings in the S&P 500, the overall profitability of the S&P 500 dropped 0.4% from the previous year. Didn't rise, it dropped. And the projections are now that it's going to drop another 0.1%. That'll make it 0.5% lower than it was the previous year. But look where the market is. It's up 28% for 1 year? So the market is 28% higher, but earnings are lower than they were at this time last year. That is an indication that the market and reality have parted company or headed off to separate destinations. And this is what happens when we get something called irrational exuberance. And we're headed in. By the way, the fund flow is reversed. Did you notice that? All year this year, people have been pulling money out of stock funds, and now they're putting them back in like there's no like the house is on fire or something. Now, while the market was down, people pulled money out of their equity funds and their 401ks and their IRAs and so on. And now that the market has risen and is breaking records day after day. By the way, Friday was another record day for the S&P 500.
Mm-hmm.
People are putting money back in there, and of course that reinforces the rise in the market, and FOMO is taking over. You familiar with FOMO?
Yes, fear of missing out.
And I think we've got a lot of fear of missing out going on out there. That doesn't mean you should bail out of the market, by the way. Hang in there, because it's all probabilities, and the best thing to do is to hang in there with a good portfolio.
Assuming you're well diversified,
assuming
you've
got
some good liquidity in there as well.
Yeah.
We've got to play some commercials.
We do.
We'll be back on the other side with more of the Personal Wealth Coach. If you'd like to join the conversation, the phone number's in here. Our phone number in here is 254-773-1400, and we'll be back on the other side with more of the Personal Wealth Coach.
Yeah, that's what he says. And we're back with more of the Personal Wealth Coach with Jeff and
Jake.
McClure. See, I have to remember. You know how hard it is to remember to stop after saying Jeff and?
I don't know how hard is it to remember to stop after saying Jeff and. Most people don't have that problem. After they say Jeff and, they either stop or they don't. But I don't think most people make a habit of saying Jeff and.
Jeff and.
So none of us share the understanding of this issue. You are alone in your struggle to remember to pause after saying Jeff and.
So I'm alone in my struggle.
Yes, I'm sorry. We're all here trying to be empathetic, but it's hard. We don't have the same issue.
This has been a week of mixed messages.
You could say that again.
This has been a week of mixed messages.
Thank you. That wasn't a mixed message at all.
Let me read some headlines. Existing home sales fall more than expected in November.
Yep.
U.S. building permits hit highest level since 2007.
So those are both housing statistics. Highest level of new building permits and existing homes sales falling. Okay.
And at the same time, we see retail reports warn of possibility of wider spreads. And then we have record retail purchases being made. All of these are coming out from similar sources. In this case, those all came from the U.S. retailers hit by worst year since 2008.
Where was that from?
That is from Financial Times.
Okay.
But you have to read the rest of the story for discounting. In other words, U.S. retailers are having to discount more
to make the same sale.
To make the same sales that they have made. This is the worst they've seen since 2008. discounting is just happening all over the place.
Right.
And we have a caller on 773-1400.
We do.
And you're on the air, caller, with the Personal Wealth Coach. Go ahead.
Yeah, guys. I've noticed in the past, I don't know, 6 months or so, most banks offer a high-yield checking because of the turmoil in the repo market. Do you think that that's here to stay, or are those going to go away once the repo market settles down? Thanks.
All right. Good question.
Have you ever heard of the term opening up a can of worms?
Yeah.
So you just opened up a can of worms.
The high-yield saving, rather than existing because of the repo market issue, is part of the reason why the repo market issue exists. That ability to get a higher yield, people are demanding it. Well, the reason why you would demand a higher yield is there's less money available. So that's why they exist, and that's also why the repo market is going through trouble, because there's less money available in the short-term area. So we just opened up a can of worms. We were talking about this on the way here. It may be that, kind of like in a transmission when you shift gears, the things that worked in the first gear do not work in the second gear. You can't look at your speedometer and gauge how much accelerator you want to push on there, because you have different RPMs. And I may have just confused everybody that has not used a manual transmission. Basically, what I'm saying is that you've got to run the engine at a different speed after you shift gears. And sometimes that's a slower speed to be more efficient.
You're confusing the issue.
Yes. The idea with the repo market is we've just shifted gears. The rules have changed.
But we don't know what gear we shifted into.
Right. The rules definitely have changed at the Federal Reserve on how much reserves you have to have on hand. The rules have changed at the federal government level in that they are borrowing huge amounts of money, and that doesn't look like it's going to change anytime soon. Both of those affect this world. If we continue to use the same kind of controls that we did before those issues, we're not going to have good results.
There is something that is unquestionable. I'm sure somebody could question it, but I think
I question that immediately. I question that it's unquestionable.
There is something new and different going on in the macro economy than we've ever seen before. And that is that interest rates are all out of whack. I mean,
Yes, you have said it the best. That is the easiest and best way of understanding it. They're all out of whack.
There are trillions of dollars, literally trillions of dollars of negative interest debt floating around in the European and U.S. economy. And I say negative interest debt. If you figure that inflation is going to run, let's say, even 2%, and there's a tremendous amount of government security, tremendous number of government securities out there that are paying less than 2%. Matter of fact, almost all of them are paying less than
2%. Yeah. So those are negative by themselves. And there's some real negatives that are stated to be negative.
So you've got, we've never had negative interest rates before, as far as I know, in the history of economics.
We have. We called it something different.
What do we call it?
Fees. That's it. That's how banks got started, is that you would pay them to hold your money and keep it safe.
But they still charge fees.
They do, which means you got more negative than you think. negative interest rates are just a new way of saying fees.
But bonds.
We're going to charge you money to hold your loan and make sure it's given back to you.
Now, that's true in banks, but not for bonds. As far as I know, and I've looked at all the history I can find, we've never gone through a period of time where bonds have been issued for hundreds of years by governments and by businesses and so on. And we've never seen negative interest rates in bonds before. We've seen low interest rates, but we've never seen negative interest rates before.
And
so I would say
we have.
We have.
But for the same reasons. It was fees, not interest at the time. It was very normal for, like, in Louis the 16th's era, when he would borrow money. He would do it at gunpoint sometimes, halberd point, and say, hey, I'm taking those candlesticks in your house. They're made out of gold, but, you'll only owe this much in taxes because of that.
Well, we're talking about bonds again here. We're not talking about loans. And
this is a bond.
Okay, but I'm talking about commercial bonds.
Okay, you're talking about commercial bonds.
Right.
That's what banks do.
Okay, commercial bonds and government bonds have always had a positive interest rate. So if you bought a bond from the government. They say, you loan money to the government. You loan £1,000.
The United States government, yes.
Or even the United States government. Or even the French government. You loan the whatever, ducats or whatever they were using that week to the French government. They would promise you a certain interest rate on it, but they never promised you, you will pay us to loan us your money before.
And I'm saying Louis the 16th actually did that.
Okay.
Yeah. He said, you will now pay us. Yeah. It would do this in a bond. So he would say, I will pay you your money back. It would be written on a piece of paper with a given maturity value and so on. And the maturity value was less than the borrowed value.
Let me define this a little further then.
Okay.
Two willing borrowers and lenders. At the commercial or governmental level.
Right. It's been a long time at the commercial level that since we've seen this. That's correct.
I can't find any place where they said, for the government of England, for example, which goes back quite a ways.
Right.
Said to you, if you loan us money, we will only charge you this much to loan us money.
Right. And certainly speaking, having it happen across a large spectrum of the world has never happened like this before.
So, and certainly not in the history of the United States, which admittedly is only about 250 years, but we've got a situation here where in the past, if you loan money, even to the government, you normally, particularly for a long period of time, you would look at the rate of inflation, add a little bit of money for the holding period.
Right.
And you would expect to get an interest rate above inflation. Now, after inflation and taxes, if you basically break even, but
right.
That's okay.
And quite traditionally, the Federal Reserve's interest rate is set at a rate that says that if you got a loan at this rate, you would have a little bit of return, just a tiny amount of return mm-hmm. above inflation.
And certainly at the corporate level.
Right.
You would expect that. And so what we're seeing is astonishingly low interest rates out to about 5 years, even in the United States. And so there's still a tremendous amount of negative interest rates running around in Europe. And there's a large amount of money invested at negative interest rates.
Right.
That effectively is a predictor historically.
Yeah.
Now, only historically. The future is not history.
And when we have to say that this exact scenario hasn't happened before, but historically it's a predictor. If it's not happened before, how is it historically a predictor?
Well, it's a predictor in the sense that if you get into a situation where bond rates are exceptionally low going into the future, lower than expected inflation,
right.
Then it is an indication that the bond market has concluded that we're going to have deflation and a depression or a recession some point in the future.
Right.
We don't know if that's true anymore because we're going through a period of time in the United States and around the world where regional areas are dissipating, and the organizations that held those regional areas together are disintegrating. The European Union one member has said within the next year we're going to be out of here. A major member of the European Union.
One of the largest members.
And that could start a chain reaction of others leaving as well. What we're seeing is a period, and I think it's the economist who coined this term, it's the period of disillusion. Disillusion.
Disillusion. That's coming apart.
And maybe
you can call it disentanglement or
disconnection.
Disconnection.
But disillusion is probably because we have this illusion of togetherness.
And dissolution is more like solution. Dissolution.
It's happening. It's even happening in the United States. We have polarization in the United States is almost, and there's a really good article that I've got here we can talk about where there are two economies in the United States.
Right.
And it depends on which political party you affiliate with, which economy you're in.
That's quite true.
If you survey Democrats right now, they will say the economy is in tatters. It's falling apart. Almost uniformly say things are going downhill. It's falling apart. Jobs are hard to find. I mean, all these bad things. And yet you turn around and go to Republicans and you do the same survey with the same words, and they will say what a wonderful economy you have and how great it is,
right.
And how easy jobs are to find.
And if you go back just a few years, 4 years, into the Obama administration, and you did the surveys, you would also have very similar answers, just flip the parties.
Well, it's true, but we're getting about from an economics point of view, this is the most polarization we've ever seen.
That's correct.
It's like there's two nations in the United States that are intermingled, and they have separate economies, and they're having separate experiences in those
sometimes
economies.
They're living next door to each other.
And it's just one of those amazing things. And I think part of that isn't just perception, because generally speaking, small business owners tend to be Republicans. And they are experiencing the shrinking margins that the Commerce Department identified.
Right.
And it's harder and harder to do business. It's harder and harder to retain employees. It's harder to find good employees. And the large businesses are generally controlled by
Democrats.
And they're saying, man, this is a piece of cake. This is the most wonderful thing we've ever seen in our life.
And most of the high earners in those large businesses are Democrats. And this is another kind of demographic flip. Over 10 years ago, 10 years ago, the high earners were massive majority in the Republican Party. Now, it's flipped. The massive majority of high earners are in the Democrat Party. And that's a weird situation. This is one of the things that happens generationally. A big generational shift
occurred. You realize you just identified yourself as a Republican.
Did I?
Yeah,
I'm not a Republican.
You called it the Democrat Party.
I called it the Democrat. That's what they call themselves.
No, the Democratic Party is what they call it.
They are registered as a Democrat Party. They call themselves Democratic, but they have registered themselves as the Democrat Party.
Really?
Yeah.
I think not.
You can look it up. I don't know for sure, but I had believed that. I'm not a Democrat either, by the way. I just identified myself as not being a Republican or a Democrat. I try to look at the political spectrum and figure out who has good ideas. It's hard because the same person that had a good idea last week will suddenly have a purely political idea this week, and I'll go, what? I can't just trust this person. Wait a minute. Does it mean that people that vote all party line just trust all their politicians?
The official name of the party is the Democratic Party.
Oh, okay. The Democratic
Party. It has been since 1844.
Okay. When Andrew Jackson decided that he needed one.
Right. But the individuals are called Democrats.
Okay.
But it's the Democratic Party. So but the Republicans traditionally have called the Democratic Party the Democrat Party.
Oh, okay. When it comes down to it, it just means popular, and republic means represented. Which right now we have a populist representative. Wait a minute. That's weird. This is one of those demographic shifts that if you've studied what this stuff means, it's just, you got it. The Liberal Party is in many ways more conservative when you go to the true definition of the word conservative, not the political definition. And vice versa. And that's because they're trying to preserve something that was in effect during the Obama administration. Well, that's a conserve thing. They're trying to conserve status quo. And the Change Party is actually trying to change back to what things were before, but it's still a change. So it's just very strange demographics. And we're about out of time. So I don't want to fill it up with strange demographic and political conversations. We have a caller on 773-1400. Caller, you are on the air with the Personal Wealth Coach. Go ahead. Wow.
We scared him off.
Or her. Could have been her.
We are running out of time for hour number one in the Personal Wealth Coach on this, the 21st day of December, the last day of fall.
Yes.
And the one thing we've concluded is everything is topsy-turvy, in and out, off kilter, disputed and mixed in message.
Yes.
We're in a shifting period when we're going from what we used to know and have known for about 40 years as the post-World War II. More than 40 years. We've known there's been a world order, if you will, for a long time.
And
it seems
shifted.
To be shifting. It's shifting to something else. Even the parties are shifting. But we want to talk about some more specific things next hour.
Yeah.
The Secure Act really needs to be addressed because it's going to affect you.
Lots of changes, and they are important changes, things that you need to plan on. What else? Let's see, the budget and the Brexit issue are
both. Budget is kind of a status quo.
Yeah, and we've covered
really
that
enough.
Change,
except for the fact that we're going to be running $1.2 trillion deficits per year for the indefinite future, which is causing some serious problems. One of the major issues, I should say, that's causing some serious problems in the cash market, meaning the amount of cash in circulation is drying up.
Yeah.
There's an awful lot of things going on. We do have a caller on 773-1400, but we have very little time. So, caller, you're on the air with the Personal Wealth Coach. Go ahead.
Yeah, I just had one question. I was just going to – I know you're saying that the stock market's going to have a correction in, you know, in the next few years. What would be your suggestion to move, you know, some money out of the stock market into what?
Not. Very simple answer. Don't.
Yeah.
If you're well diversified and you got a good portfolio, don't try to time the market.
Okay.
Just expect it. And that's part of it is that people work really hard at avoiding those downturns, and they're just really hard to avoid. They happen when you least expect them. And if you get out too soon, you miss all the buildup. And we're out of time for this hour. So
we can talk about some more of that the next time.
Yes. If you'd like to call us off the air, the website or the phone number is 254-77. Oh man, I'm giving the wrong one. 254-947-1111 or 1-800-914-7526. That's 800-914-PLAN. You can go to our webpage, thepersonalwealthcoach.com or tpwc.com. You can send us messages there. You can email us directly at jeff@tpwc.com or jake@tpwc.com. But on the website, we've got recordings of radio programs going back into the past. Until next hour. This-